The following program is sponsored by Dr. Benign and is pre-recorded. The opinions expressed in this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily represent the views of WHMI Radio or its ownership and management.
Welcome to Oral Health Total Health, a weekly program with host Dr. Benign, heard Sunday mornings at 6 a.m. here on 93.5 WHMI. Oral Health Total Health episodes will also be posted at WHMI.com's podcast section. The mission of Oral Health Total Health is to educate and enlighten you on your options regarding oral health as it affects your total health. If you'd like to contact Dr. Benign with a question, email him at oralhealth@drbenign.com or visit his website at drbenign.com. Now here's your host for Oral Health Total Health, Dr. Benign.
A warm welcome to our listeners today. I'm Dr. Fred Benign. This is Oral Health, Total Health, where we seek to educate and enlighten you on the evidence to affect the capability empowering you to make the best decisions as it affects your oral health and as such your total health. I'm an oral maxillofacial surgeon in Brighton, Michigan, and I'm very pleased and honored to have with me today a dear colleague, Dr. Earl Beaugrow. Earl, a warm welcome.
Good day.
Earl was actually, full disclosure, a classmate of mine. He's a Mason Blue undergrad and got his dental degree at the University of Michigan. We were in the same class. And what was it, after 35 years of practicing general dentistry, you...
I made a big change in my career, basically, in the field of dentistry, but related, not out of general dentistry, into the world of dental sleep medicine.
And our topic today will be on sleep apnea and both some of the surgical as well as the dental therapeutic appliance for dealing with sleep apnea.
And snoring.
And I mean, if you don't know somebody that snores, you're blessed. But it has a lot of medical consequences. And the research on this really picked up in about 1990, I want to say.
The whole field of sleep medicine is actually only 20, 30 years old.
Exactly. I remember hearing discussions of jaw advancement surgery, and I was prepared to talk to all the physicians in the community, and I was so far ahead of the curve they didn't even know what sleep apnea was. And for our listeners, I think it's important that we begin and talk about the importance of sleep. We sometimes take it for granted. We get cavalier, but there are consequences. And Earl, tell us a little bit about the importance of sleep.
Well, it used to be thought that you know, it's you're tough if you don't sleep enough. You know, I'd only need 2 hours sleep. Well, nobody just needs 2 hours sleep. So think about this. Scientists have discovered a revolutionary new treatment that makes you live longer. It enhances your memory and makes you more creative. It makes you look more attractive. It keeps you slim and lowers your food cravings. It protects you from cancer and dementia. It wards off colds and the flu. It lowers your risk of heart attack and stroke, not to mention diabetes. You'll even feel happier, less depressed, and less anxious. Are you interested? What do you think that is, Fred?
Well, it's either some high-pitched sales talk for some potion, but it sounds to me like sleep.
It's a good night's sleep. It's worth every penny you can spend.
If our listeners were to think about, and some of you are up very early in the morning tuning in with us, the value of a good night's sleep versus that day that you're in a fog. We know it affects executive order decision making, which is where you're trying to manage multiple dependent variables, like my product arrives at such and such a time, but it has to be out of here so and so, but that person isn't here, and who do I call, and who's the backup, and what do we do if it's late? Do we notify them? Who's supposed to notify them? And if you're sleep deprived, that's just you get edgy, you get nasty.
Can't concentrate. There's a big difference. There's a difference between quantity of sleep and quality of sleep. And unless you're getting both, and I always say the magic number, and how many of you in this listening audience have gotten less than 7 hours sleep last night? I would tend to bet a high percentage. If you did, you are probably sleep deprived. But again, there's a difference between being clinically sleep deprived and being electively sleep deprived. There are many people just don't get enough sleep, but there's a difference between that and having a clinical diagnosis.
And when we start getting into sleep disturbances, which is what this is going to center around, we have people who have problems sleeping from medications or brain deterioration. But more importantly, and far more commonly, we have those with obstructive sleep apnea,
which is probably the biggest category of a sleep disorder. There's 89 different sleep disorders. There's many kinds of insomnia. There's different narcolepsy. There's what's called central sleep apnea. But obstructive sleep apnea is probably the biggest category of a sleep disorder there is, and it's so prevalent. It's out there.
I'm sure the numbers are bewildering, but somebody who has this, it fundamentally boils down to an airway problem.
Absolutely.
And that's where I, as a oral maxillofacial surgeon, may get involved, and we'll talk later about jaw surgery as well as other otolaryngological procedures to assist in the airway.
And again, there's a difference of snoring and sleep apnea. Typically, they come together. But where does sleep apnea, where is it? Where does it occur? It's when you sleep, when you start to fall asleep, your airway has a tendency to close. When we're up during the day, we don't snore during the day. We don't stop breathing during the day. The way when we're awake, our jaw's forward, our tongue's forward, our neck muscles are pulled away, and we breathe. And where sleep apnea occurs is in the back of the throat, right at the junction between the back of the tongue, that thing that hangs in the back of the throat called the uvula, and your throat and our neck muscles. Again, when we're awake, we don't have any of these factors. But the minute you go to sleep, many things change in many people. The first thing that happens in many people as you lay back to sleep, our lower jaw has a tendency to drop back a little bit. Our tongue drops back. Our neck muscles start to sag and relax a little more. And all of a sudden, that space that's wide open during the day gets smaller and smaller until one of two things will happen, Fred. One is you'll start to snore. But the next thing which could happen, if that airway gets too small and those tissues get too close together, they actually could attach to each other.
Forgive my sound effects. Keep going.
And close off. And when I give lectures, I usually start by saying, you can go 3 weeks without eating. You can go 3 days without drinking. But you can't go 3 minutes without breathing. And when you're not breathing for more than a few seconds, our bodies have a reaction. And our brains have all these sensors. And one of the main sensors, when it senses we're not breathing, there's a release in our body of a little adrenaline and cortisol. And I don't know how many of you out there have ever woken up with a little gasp or a little cough. Or if some people it's simpler, where they might just kind of take a breath, turn over, not even know they're waking up, but they're coming out of their sleep stages.
And that
out
disturbs
of their,
it.
And it's totally disturbing. And every time you have one of these events, this little, it's like getting up. It's like having, it's like a jump start to the heart. And that's why there's direct correlations when you have these things, a direct correlation between sleep apnea and heart problems, sleep apnea and strokes, sleep apnea and diabetes, sleep apnea and dementia. Because every time you're having these events, what happens? There's a decrease in oxygen level of the blood. When there's a decrease in oxygen level of blood, what does that mean? That means there's a decrease in oxygen level going to your brain. So it's a cascade of events, Fred.
And the effects, there's a risk population, but this can occur in children, and there's a lot of correlation with hyperactivity that is misdiagnosed as ADHD that is in fact sleep deprivation.
And no child should snore.
And these kids are hyperactive, they're irritable, they want to fall asleep, they're cranky, they cannot concentrate, and they get labeled with ADHD instead of a savvy clinician running a sleep study and determining that they're having these apneic events.
And there is treatment for it.
And there is. And so it can affect all age groups. I think men more than women.
Probably men more than women from about 3 to 4 to 1, but postmenopausal women, it's the same percentage as men.
Mm-hmm.
It's why sleep apnea becomes more prevalent as you get older. I have many patients, skinny as a beanpole, who are in their 20s and 30s, but the predominant people who get sleep apnea is as you get in your 50s, 60s, two things happen typically. One, most people gain a few pounds. Weight gain is probably the single greatest contributing factor. But the other thing that we can't control as we age is our muscle tone and our tissue tone tend to relax a little bit and sag a little bit. During the day, we're fine. But when we go to sleep, everything just kind of closes off a little bit more.
And the predisposition, and as you know, with the small jaws, the bad bites, the narrow palates, the large tongues, the facial appearance of a retruded lower jaw or chin, going back to, I think, Charles Dickens with a Pickwickian overweight, and many people make
the fat old man. That's the prototype.
The roly poly, and he's always falling asleep in his chair at the dinner table. And what's unfortunate is the disease process is associated with it, but the compromise in life, as well as the cognitive impairment. And I think we think of motor vehicle accidents. The ability to concentrate or dozing off because you're sleep apneic, it's a serious and prevalent problem, and it's relatively easy to get a sleep study, but the consequences of this.
The good and bad about sleep apnea, if there's anything good about it, is most people can still function, especially people with mild to moderate apnea, and we can go into the whole category how that is. But it's you can still function, but you're not at your top of your game. And slowly
it's
but
that
surely,
fog, yeah.
It's that fog, and it starts to affect, and it cascades down. So it's not just if you remember nothing else, I want you to remember these three numbers: the numbers 40, 70, 80. What that means is 40% of the adult population snore. Of the people who snore, about 70% of those people have sleep apnea, statistically. But of the people who have sleep apnea, this is the kicker. 80% of those people are undiagnosed, meaning there are millions of people walking around with these signs and symptoms that say, yeah, I'm getting a little older. I can't concentrate. Well, I snore. My dad snored. My grandmother snored.
Yeah,
it's in the family.
Things, yeah.
You know what? I can deal with it. Hey, I doze off. I'm getting a little older. It's easy to rationalize on the other side, it could kill you.
So it really comes down to making the diagnosis. You can have all the predictive numbers you want, but if you're symptomatic, if you have daytime fatigue, if you're snoring, you can get a sleep study. And sleep study is done through a sleep lab. I know the politics of that a physician colleagues can order them. I, as an oral maxillofacial surgeon, can order it. You must team with a physician to get the sleep study. And that's going to tell us how many events that we have.
And they rate the severity of sleep apnea by this number.
So mild, moderate, severe.
And I hate that term, mild, moderate. If you have it, you have it. I kind of say A, B, and C, but I hate mild because mild sleep apnea, you can still be very affect your health.
But we can get this diagnosis so that we can put a handle on it. And that opens us up, empowers you to therapeutic interventions to really improve both your oral health as well as your total health by managing sleep apnea. With me has been Dr. Earl Bagureau, my dear colleague from Southfield, Michigan, who is disciplined in sleep medicine dentistry, and we'll return shortly to continue our discussion of therapies.
You're listening to Oral Health Total Health with Dr. Benign on 93.5 WHMI.
When it comes to your wisdom teeth, Dr. Bonine wants you to know that he is committed to your health and safety. So Dr. Bonine uses the latest state-of-the-art medications to keep you comfortable and to help you heal faster, safely, without opioids. We use powerful, effective non-opioid pain medications. To keep you comfortable, your choice of anesthesia options may include IV sedation or general anesthesia. To help you heal faster, anti-swelling medications virtually eliminate unsightly chipmunk cheeks. And in the latest medical technology breakthrough, we use your body's own platelet-rich fibrin to speed up your healing process. Learn more about how we're committed to providing you with the best and safest wisdom teeth care. Visit our website at drbonine.com or call 810-229-9180 for a consult. Dr. Bonine, experience you can trust.
Welcome back to Oral Health Total Health. If you'd like to ask Dr. Bonine a question, email him at oralhealth@drbonine.com or visit his website at drbonine.com. And now back with more. Here's your host, Dr. Bonine.
A warm welcome back to our listeners today on Oral Health, Total Health. I'm Dr. Fred Bonine, oral maxillofacial surgeon. Our guest, dear guest with me today is Dr. Earl Bogro, a dentist who focuses on sleep dentistry. We have worked to kind of set the stage for the breadth of an importance of sleep, the sleep deficits with the health consequences. The prevalence, I think you said, was it 30%?
25%.
Of the population, a large percent snores, and with that can be these apneic events when you literally stop breathing. You may wake up in the choking, or you're breathing heavy, or you have a sense that you're gasping.
You know, my experience might be a way to kind of let people know what's going on. I've been a general dentist, as Fred mentioned. We were classmates back. We graduated dental school, University of Michigan Dental School in 1979. I've been a general dentist for over 40 years. Love dentistry. But about 12 years ago, my wife started complaining or noticing that I was snoring more. Not only was I snoring more, but she'd look over at me and she said, "You'd stop breathing for seconds at a time."
That's terrifying.
And yeah. I'd be making these weird noises, a little gasping, and I'd be waking up several times during the day. And I'd be coming home from work more and more exhausted. I've always been a high-energy guy. I'm certainly not that Pickwickian figure that you brought up earlier. I weigh 170. I bike thousands of miles. I ran marathons. But when this happened to me, I finally reluctantly brought it up to my doctor at a physical. He said, "Let's give you a sleep test." And when I saw the results of that, because I used to think that the only people that got sleep apnea were people who weighed 300 pounds with a 20-inch neck. Hey, that's not me. When I started to read the correlations of sleep apnea and heart problems and strokes and all the things we mentioned earlier, I said, "Hey, what do I do about it?" And that caught me on this whole mission of helping. Not only did it help myself, but it changed the whole course of my career. That now I dedicate my entire practice to helping people who have some similar problems.
That's awesome.
They cured me, and I no longer have that lull during the day. I don't snore anymore. I haven't had sore ribs, Fred, in 10 years from my wife elbowing me. You're snoring.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, full disclosure, I'm a sleep apneic, and we get into the therapy, and as a guy that dishes it out.
And you and I do not fit the typical profile.
Although I was much worse before I lost a few pounds.
Okay. So, again, weight loss can only help.
That's really where it all begins, is your first option.
Is lifestyle.
Is lifestyle. And drinking alcohol in the evening.
People think that drinking alcohol makes you sleep better.
It's
a totally misnomer, because when you drink in alcohol, it affects not only you might fall asleep and doze off, but you're not getting the deep sleep. You're not getting what we call REM sleep. And REM sleep is most responsible for feeling refreshed during the day. And when you're not getting that, and it throws your whole system off, You know, again, it's a major problem.
For the stages of sleep, REM would be like the part of the music that's just the best part of the composition or song or symphony.
Yeah, about 25% of our sleep is in REM sleep, which stands for rapid eye movement. It's the period where we do most of our dreaming, and it's the most responsible for feeling refreshed. We get about 25% of what we call deep sleep, which is where human growth hormone is released. Our bodies just replenish. And then the other is what we call light sleep. And I call it junk sleep, but it's not. It's all necessary sleep. But when we go to sleep, we just don't go light sleep, deep sleep. and REM sleep and wake up. We cycle through those stages.
It's a cycle. And if you're having these apneic events, and they actually graph them out during a sleep study, and we get some quantification, it can lead to, okay, the first recommendation is lifestyle. Let's drop 10, 15 pounds.
Don't sleep flat on your back so your jaw settles back.
I was told, well, above 190, you're going to have a problem, and below 190, you do pretty well. That lasted for a while. I'm now at 175, but I still have had that relaxing. I don't know, something about losing your Spring Chicken Club membership, these things begin happening. But
I'm still fighting it, Fred.
Yeah, well, reality's always – it's an attitude. It's an attitude. Frank Lloyd Wright would say age you can't do anything about, youth. You either have it or you don't. And I saw your bike on the back of your car today, so I know you have it.
And we know people – I know people who are 40 who are old, and I know people who are 80 who are young.
Exactly. You have your biological age, and the quality of sleep can really affect that whole energy of your biological age. So lifestyle begins part of it. Recognition, not sleeping on your back.
Not having a computer or a blue screen in front of you, which can affect your circadian rhythms, which we can have a whole discussion just on that alone.
So, and as a surgeon, I like to think that I know when to do surgery. And this is no one who needs surgery when you're first diagnosed. So we get into the conservative treatments.
The non-surgical.
The conservative non-surgical treatments. And
there's room for every. I mean, some people need the non-surgical, and some are going to benefit so much more from the surgical. So I'm not saying one is better, but I'd prefer to start on the non-surgical and work toward that.
I will. So, I, as a surgeon, love what I do. But even more importantly, I like knowing when I need to do it and having a patient understand what their options are and that. You know, if I see you because you have a small jaw and I run a sleep study, we're going to do a lot of simple things first because that is truly probably the easiest and best and most conservative way to start. And that would include?
Well, the predominant treatment is what's called a CPAP. A CPAP stands for continuous positive air pressure. It's a machine, it's a mask that goes over your nose and mouth, and it blows air down your throat. It opens the airway. It works. It's still considered the gold standard for treatment. If you talk to 90% of sleep doctors, they're going to say, get a CPAP. But the biggest problem with the CPAP is compliance. Statistically, 50% of the people get a CPAP, and I think that's a conservative estimate. Can't tolerate it for whatever reason, whether it's the claustrophobia of this machine, whether it's the hoses that have to be cleaned, whether it's difficulty in travel because you're carrying an extra suitcase with you wherever you go. It's just
– it's like the presidential football. Unfortunately, I carry my own football when I travel. But there's a learning curve with it. And having had CPAPs from 20 years ago – versus the more modern ones, I wear a nasal mask.
It works.
I put it on. I actually enjoy it. And they're designed now to sense your breathing, and then they build the pressure. So it's not like you
a
put
BiPAP
this.
A BiPAP or APAP. It's a variation. Yes.
It's not like a fire hose coming in your nostril. And it ramps up the airflow, and you get this gentle pressure. And the fun thing is you can pull the covers over your head on a cold night.
And I never try to talk anybody out of a CPAP. Works, and some people love it, just like you're describing. And it's kind of complete and just makes you feel like you're ready to go to sleep. It turns a signal off.
It's a behavioral thing. So then we go on to the oral appliances.
And that's what I predominantly do. I'm a general dentist. When I was first diagnosed, I got a CPAP. I can't say I liked it, but I know it helped me. And that's when I started reading my dental journals about these dental appliances. And the whole concept is based on the concept. Let's say somebody's unconscious and they're administering CPR to somebody. What's the first thing they teach you to resuscitate somebody? Pull the chin out and the neck out for further. Why? To open the airway. It's all about maintaining an open airway. So we can create a custom dental appliance that guides your jaw slightly forward so it stops the snoring and stops the closing of the airway. It's a simple concept, but it's not that simple. And it's not that simple, Fred, because there are over 100 appliances that have been approved by the FDA for snoring or sleep apnea. I'd be the first to tell you a very high percentage of the appliance on the market today, whether it's online, over the counter, even some that some dentists make, it could work, but it could also cause other side effects. It could cause your jaw to hurt. It could cause your bite to change. It could cause your teeth to shift. So what I do, and what anybody who's considered a diplomate or certified by the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine, the most successful appliances and the only ones I use, and I have narrowed it down from over 100 to about 5 that will work because they're custom made and they're adjustable. Being adjustable, the adjustability factor changed the whole ball game, so that now the dental appliance therapy in most cases is just as effective as the CPAP.
And that's really awesome, because not everyone can tolerate it and gives us a non-surgical. A lot of times the otolaryngologists get involved, and there are some surgical things. There are nerve stimulators to have implanted and
Inspire. You probably have heard commercials on this company called Inspire, which is a hypoglossal nerve stimulator. It sends impulse to your trunk. Any of these things can work. What's the best for each individual? That remains to be seen.
Too often, and we were talking about a case just coming in. One of the staff here at the studio was saying, "Well, they did the septum, but they never had the sleep study to justify it." And sometimes there is the palatoplasty, where they go in and they reshape the palate, and it's very effective. I think it's like 90% effective in stopping snoring, but only 30% of the time stopping the sleep apnea. And that's really what's significant here. The snoring,
you can turn somebody into a silent apneic.
A silent apneic.
Which is dangerous.
And then there's a small percentage that then go on to maxillary and mandibular advancement surgery,
which is probably the most successful. It's also the most intrusive.
Yes, it is. It is got the best 90% success at 5 years. But I'm going to go in and lengthen your lower jaw and lengthen your upper jaw. And 4 hours later, in a month's worth of restricted diet, your teeth are still fitting together, but your airway will have been opened, and it makes a big difference. But that's a 4-hour surgery with general anesthesia on somebody who may have some of these secondary hypertensive cardiac or other health consequences, obesity, and we take these decisions very, very thoughtfully.
Well, I just wanted to let you know, I'm my own best testimonial that I used to get 5-6 hours sleep for probably 30 years, thinking that was all I needed. Now, I'm 68 years old. If I don't get at least 7 hours sleep a night, I feel I cheated myself. I get the quality of sleep and the quantity of sleep. And Fred, you know what? I used to love being a general dentist. I love helping people save their teeth. Now, I love even more helping people save their relationships and their lives. It's been an incredible journey for me. And again, I changed my whole course of my career in my 60s because this is something that helped me so dramatically.
It's a profound impact that, talking with your dentist, if he's not aware of someone that's doing sleep dentistry, talk to the oral surgeon, talk to your physician.
The American Dental Association now is mandatory for dentists to learn how to screen for this.
And this has been just fascinating. And we've talked about the importance of sleep, significance of sleep apnea with Dr. Earl Bagrow, who is a sleep dentistry advocate. And I'm Dr. Fred Benign. This has been Oral Health, Total Health. Thank you for joining us. And we look forward to having you tune in again. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Oral Health Total Health, a weekly program heard on 93.5 WHMI. Sunday mornings at 6 a.m. Oral Health Total Health episodes will also be posted at WHMI.com's podcast section. Oral Health Total Health's mission is to educate and enlighten you on your options regarding oral health as it affects your total health. If you'd like to submit a question for Dr. Benign, please send it to oralhealth@drbenign.com. To learn more about Dr. Benign's practice, visit drbenign.com. Join us here next week for another episode of Oral Health Total Health on 93.5 WHMI, Livingston County's own classic hits.